Hello, and welcome to Creation Matters with your host, Mike Riddle, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live. Mike is an author, teacher, and conference speaker, and is president of Christian Training and Development Services. Creation Matters is dedicated to the teaching of the biblical and scientific truths about God's creation. In the beginning, God created, and for by Him were all things created. And now here's your host of Creation Matters, Mike Riddle.
Welcome to Creation Matters. I'm your host, Mike Riddle, and it's good to be back in the studio. We have had a wonderful tour through California, Idaho, and New York, speaking to many, many students and adults there, and even children on dinosaurs. But we're back in the studio this day, and we have a special challenge here today. We're going to do an open line session today. We want to hear from you any topic on creation evolution. Any topic on creation evolution. If you believe in evolution, we want to hear from you. If you believe in the Bible and creation, we want to hear from you also. Any topic that you can ask, or if you just want to call up and give us some information on what you believe, we want to have that too. So give us a call at 800-955-8200. That's 800-955-8200. Or if you're local, you can give us a call on 206-374-8800. And I'd like to start with, in case anybody doesn't know out there, there's been a lot in the press around the country on something called a creation museum. Did you know the group Answers in Genesis, which I do work for now, Answers in Genesis, is building a $25 million museum? Isn't that incredible? $25 million museum just outside Cincinnati in northern Kentucky. And it is going to be fabulous. It will change people's lives. They're going to have a planetarium in there, a whole plaza area for children, and they're even going to have a special effects theater. This thing is going to be dynamite. It will show the whole history of the world, starting from creation, going all the way through the Bible, all the way up to Jesus Christ's return, folks. This is going to be an amazing museum. Life-size dinosaurs in there. And I've seen these dinosaur sculptures. They are so real-looking, you wouldn't know that they're not real. This is going to be a fabulous place. So if you want to take a vacation, get to northern Kentucky and find out about this creation museum from Answers in Genesis. If you want to find out more, go to the website called www.answersingenesis.org. That's www.answersingenesis.org. And you can take a virtual tour of this online. And let's go to our first caller, Catherine from Kent. You have a question for us.
Yeah, I'm curious as to if we all started out as with Adam and Eve, where did all the different races come from? How did that evolve?
Great question, Kathy. You know, that's a very, very important question because what the Bible teaches is that there's only one race, and we all started with Adam and Eve. Now, where did all these, and I don't want to say races or different nations or people groups come from because that's what the Bible calls them. You know, the whole idea of races and racism is really part of evolutionism there. That's what evolution teaches.
Uh-huh.
But Adam and Eve were perfect. And you know, we have one mechanism in us that generates our skin color. It's called melanin. And some people have more genetic capability for melanin, meaning they can become darker. And some people have less genetic capability, like myself. I'm a former, almost a former redhead now, incidentally, because it's turned white a little bit. But I don't have the genetic capability to get any darker. So all that is, and when we talk about different colors, it's not different races. It's different amounts of genetic capability of melanin, and natural selection can help bring that out, or people group isolation, such as after the Tower, or during the Tower of Babel. Groups got isolated, and people groups would have been separated by their language or maybe some culture differences there, and they would have gone off and lost certain bits of information. In other words, people groups that went to hot, arid climates might retain or have a darker shade. People who went to colder climates might become a little shorter, stockier, like our Eskimos and Inuits or Neanderthals, and have maybe a lighter shade. But then there's the eye shapes. What about the eye shapes? Well, all that is a genetic feature called a little fat layer underneath our eyes. The more you have, the more round, the more almond-shaped you might be. The less you have, the more round your eyes might be. So the Bible clearly teaches one race. We're all from one blood, as the Bible teaches. But Darwinism is based on racism. Does that answer your question there, Catherine?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you.
Well, again, we were talking about that museum. You've got to plan a vacation. It'll be open in about a year and a half is the estimates, but a lot of it is already finished, folks. This is going to be a life-changing museum for people around the world. Now, I'd like to get some headlines that are happening here, some basic headlines. What's happening in evolution? If you want to give us a call on any topic, give us a call at 800-955-8200. We want to hear from you if you're believing in evolution. Now, I know a lot of evolutionists are a little afraid to come on this show because they really can't defend what they believe, but I want to invite you on here anyway. We want to invite you. We're not going to be rude. We're not going to beat you up. We're just going to show you that you're wrong. So give us a call, 800-955-8200. Or if you believe the Bible, we'd love to hear from you and why you believe the Bible, why you believe that God created everything in six little days, and why we don't want to compromise. Why people don't want to compromise, because, you know, we compromise in business. We compromise in a lot of other areas, but we should never compromise when it becomes God's Word, folks. But here's some things that have been happening. You know, astrobiology, that's the study of life in outer space. You know, I believe that the University of Washington, I don't know if they still do, but they used to have a PhD in astrobiology. I call that a PhD in nothingness. But anyway, let's go on with this. Astrobiology, much ado about nothing so far. The mood at NASA Astrobiology Institute, incidentally, I have spoken there, folks. I have spoken there. At their Astrobiology Institute was very upbeat lately. Much of the excitement comes from a flood of data about Mars. That's enough to get even your SETI Institute promoting astrobiology, much like a big TV commercial. SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence out there. I wonder if they have any in their organization there sometimes. But here's a quote. Here's a quote from there. What a fabulous opportunity to think about the boundaries of what that life might be like, talking about life on Mars. It's really setting the backdrop and driving forward everybody's thinking, certainly not mine. So it just gets more exciting to think about how nature might have generalized biology and geology. Folks, that's much ado about nothing. They're not going to find any life up there. The actual data by all space probes and all known planets, even the supposed the planets outside our system so far, have detected absolutely not one hint of life or any microscopic life anywhere, or that it ever existed, or that it's even possible to exist, folks. See, these people aren't doing their science. You see, in order to get life, you can't have water to start in. See, life will not start in water. We talked about that last week. Water is one of the worst places in the universe for life to start. Also, you have to get the right amino acid mix, and that is probability wise zero, folks. No one can understand how we get all these things called the right shape of amino acids. So they're not thinking scientifically. They're just off in a closet thinking, well, we watch a lot of Star Trek, therefore we can put that in our science journals, folks. We've got to get back to science, and that's what's influencing a lot of our evolution thinking, folks. We need to get back to science. So much ado about nothing there on evolution and astrobiology. Now, if you want to give us a call, 800-955-8200, and give us some information about what you believe and why you believe it. Now, I'd like to give you what I call the quote of the week here. Here's a quote of the week, and you aren't going to believe this, but listen to this quote by an evolutionist. And here's what they say, quote, evolution is blind and brutish, but every now and then it stumbles across a truly stunning innovation that rewrites the rules of life. Well, folks, that just explains it all. That's what we mean by non-thinking people, folks. It's not that they're not smart. They're just not thinking about this. What a fairy tale. How could anybody believe in evolution if this is what it's all about, folks? How could anybody believe in evolution? It just is nothing more than a fairy tale, folks. Give us a call at 800-955-8200. I'm going to just keep barraging you with these wonderful little tidbits from evolution. Now, let's talk about dating. How about some dating? Now, hold on now. I'm not talking about boy and girl here, folks. I'm talking about dating methods, about how we date rocks and fossils. Any of you out there put your trust in the evolutionary scheme of dating, how they date rocks and fossils? Well, I sure hope not. I hope you're not believing what we find in our textbooks on this whole process, folks, because those people, I'll let you know right now, have a very strict bias, and their bias says, we don't want you believing in Jesus Christ. Now, I'm talking about the secular books, not the ones we might find in the Christian's book in the schools. But let me tell you something about confidence in dating fossils and rocks. You know, for about 40 years, over 40 years, Piltdown Man was said to be 500,000 years old. For 40 years, that lasted in our school systems. You know what? It was found out to be not 500,000 years old, but only about 600 years old. The whole thing was a fraud to begin with. And that's what evolutionists want you to believe, folks. Well, you think that's maybe an isolated case. Well, here's another one. Nebraska Man. Now, anybody know where Nebraska Man was found? Well, I heard that. Nebraska. You guys are just great anthropologists out there. Nebraska Man was claimed to be 1 million years old. Well, it turned out to be a pig's tooth, folks, and it wasn't very old at all. So there's another great mistake we've been taught. Then there's another creature called Ramapithecus. Ramapithecus, another one of these alleged intermediates between apes and humans, now shown to be false. It was claimed to be 14 million years old, and that lasted for almost 30 years in the school systems. Ramapithecus turned out to be some kind of an ape that was still living today, folks. Do you still have confidence in the dating methods? I sure hope not, but let's go on from there. You want to talk more about dating methods? I call this one old dirt. Old dirt. A deposit once considered to be Earth's oldest seafloor, long assumed to have contained organic compounds from the earliest life forms, considered to be 3.5 billion years old by earlier facts, notice that facts of dating, have now been reinterpreted by the evolutionists themselves to be only thousands of years old. Isn't that incredible? That should just blow your mind of any confidence in their dating schemes, folks. And let's go back to the Bible, and why don't we trust the Bible for what it says, that this earth and universe is only about 6,000 years old. Well, let's go to our next caller, Daniel from Seattle. You have a question for us.
Yes, good afternoon. I love your show.
Oh, thank you, Daniel.
I have a question from the biblical standpoint. We know the Tower of Babel. Languages just sort of appeared at one point during the confusion of tongues. Scientifically, or I guess from anthropology or anything, is there anything to support that evidence?
From anthropology, there's a tongue twister for me today. Well, the only evidence we have is from the Bible where the languages come from at the Tower of Babel, and you're exactly right on that. From a scientific point of view, languages are very complicated tools to communicate. And the evolutionists really don't have anything to go on other than sitting around in a room and thinking it up how it might have happened. That's the best they have. But we do have something. We have the Word of God, which is true from beginning to end. It says at the Tower of Babel, He confused their languages.
Okay. What I was trying to drive at is I've heard before that there was no slow development of languages, but some people have said historically that all of a sudden all these different, there's no indication prior to a certain point, and then all these different unrelated languages popped up. Is that supported by science?
It's not supported scientifically how all the languages got here. The only thing we have is the biblical explanation.
Okay.
So before the Tower of Babel, all we had was one language, and then God instantaneously created all the other languages. So we have no scientific proof of that because we can't prove things certain scientifically sometimes.
Right.
So thank you a lot, Daniel, for that.
Okay, well, thank you.
Well, let's go to Steve in Shoreline. You have a question.
Oh, yeah, I just had a comment. I actually have 2 degrees in medical sciences. I am both a physician and I used to be a veterinarian, and there was quite a bit of biology in my training. And I have yet to come across anything that convinces me to be anything but a creationist. I think that you're absolutely right that it's a matter of faith that the people who are evolutionists subscribe to. And I just wanted to comment that I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying.
Well, thanks a lot for that, Steve. I'd sure like to get in contact with the next update of my book. I'm looking for more scientists and people of your stature there to put their names in there for people that actually believe in creation.
Well, you know, it's funny, though, the way the folks do it on in the lecture halls, they come about defining their terms. I still remember in undergraduate school, I had a professor, his first statement out of his mouth was, let's define evolution. And he defined evolution as a change in the gene pool. Well, there's always change in the gene pool. And he used the example of the moths that used to have dark wings, and then the owls ate all of the dark wing ones, and then there was light wings. And he says, well, that defines evolution. Well, so in that sense, I would say, yeah, evolution is true if you're just purely defining the gene pool changing. However, if you're talking about a dog evolving into something else or a fish being able to sprout legs, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Steve, if you want to hold on, we're going to go to a break. I don't know if you want to hold on or not, but I like what you're saying there.
Sure.
Yes, hold on, and we'll come back to you right after this commercial break, because one of the things I found about evolution is most of them don't understand evolution. Welcome back to Creation Matters, and we're doing an open line this week. Give us a call at 800-955-8200, 800-955-8200, and voice your opinion about creation evolution. And with me online is Steve, and who has two medical degrees. How are you doing there, Steve, again?
Oh, doing great.
Thank you for holding on for us. And you made mention just before we left that how evolutionists define evolution. And actually, I find about a dozen different definitions, from change over time to a change in the gene pool. And I find that they really don't understand evolution very well, because they get confused with genetic variability over evolution.
Oh, you're absolutely right. They'll just define it as such. But, you know, you have to understand that evolution is a faith, it's a religion, and they need to find reasons why we're here apart from finding a bigger designer or God that makes things. And it's interesting to see how entrenched they are in that.
That's exactly right. Now, Steve, if you'd like, go out to our website, creationmatters.org, and if you'd like to chat with you more on this later, because I'm very interested, especially with your background.
Oh, sure. It would be great.
Maybe even get you in touch with Answers in Genesis there.
Okay, be happy to.
Thanks a lot, and God bless, Steve.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye. Well, let's go to Jack from Port Orchard. You have a question.
Hi. I had kind of a comment. I used to live in Africa, and I don't know how much this has been studied, but I think it has. You were talking about the evidence of languages and the Tower of Babel, but I noticed in Africa that you could go 20 miles and the languages would be as different as like Italian and Chinese. It wouldn't be like Portuguese and French and Spanish. I mean, they were nothing the same. I mean, not even mother and father or numbers or basic verbs or even constructions. And this happened over and over and over and over again all around you in very close radius. And I'm sure there's been some studies done about that sort of thing.
Well, there's been a lot of studies done, but the evolutionists are unable to come up with any answer. But I like what you said there.
I understand they can't come up with an answer, but when you live in a situation like that, it is it's shocking.
Isn't it? I've been to places.
Absolutely shocking. It isn't. You know, I can understand Portuguese and French and Spanish. You can practically, after you learn two of them.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, you're.
I gotta go. My minutes are almost gone, but I just wanted to throw that into the pot.
Well, thanks a lot, Jack, and God bless you for calling.
Okay. Bye bye.
And Jack was exactly right. You know, we have a lot of languages out there, and sometimes these languages just start to vary little by little. And just take a look at this country. We have people that talk in southern language. We have people that talk regular. We have all kinds of languages right here in this country. My wife is giving me the hand there because she grew up in North Carolina. She has one of these southern talks. But like Italian, and there's a lot of variations of these languages, variations of the Chinese languages, and that happens quite a bit. Let's go to our next caller, Art from Puyallup. You have a question for us.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. I drive up to Seattle from Tacoma area, and just as I pass the Duwamish curve there, there's what looks like a whole bunch of clay in the cutout of the road, and next to it is some solid rock. And I'm just wondering, what is clay and how did it get there? And secondly, the Grand Canyon, Zion National Park, Escalantes, and so on and so forth, that is all sedimentary rock. I don't understand how, you know, so much rock was created down there, and hoping you can help me.
Okay, great question. Now, the sediments. Now, most of this planet is sedimentary rock, and you really can't do radioisotope dating on sedimentary rock, because what it basically is, it's little grains from many different places all brought together, usually by water, and then slowly through other elements cements itself together to become very solid. Now, the Grand Canyon, how did we get all those deposits down there?
Well, yeah, they're huge.
Yes,
yeah.
They're very huge. I've been to the Grand Canyon many times, hiked down in there, and it is just a wonderful place to visit. Now, the Grand Canyon, one of the interesting things about the Grand Canyon, let me give a real good point to how it got there. There's a place called the Great Unconformity in the Grand Canyon. Now, unconformity is an area where we have a layer of sedimentation that's one age, and right on top of that is another layer of sedimentation that is a completely different age. And we have a place there called the Great Unconformity, and there's a dark area there that's called the Dox Formation. It's very dark sediments. And it has been dated by the evolutionists to be 1 billion years old. And right on top of that is another layer of sediments called the Tapet Sandstone. And it's very light in color, so you see a very distinct difference between the two layers. Now remember, the bottom layer, the dark layer, was dated at 1 billion years old, according to the evolutionists. And their own dating method dates the top layer at only 500 million years old. So in other words, there's a 500 million years missing of sedimentation between those two layers. Now, the evolutionist explanation is this, that the oceans overran this continent and laid down the lower layer, the darker layer. Then after a while, the oceans receded and stayed out for about 500 million years. Then they overtook the country again, the oceans overran the country again and laid the top layer down, the lighter layer. And that's why we have 500 million years missing. Well,
how about all the hundreds of layers? I mean, there's at least 100 layers in, you know, from top to bottom.
Oh, yes. Well, actually, there's not quite 100 layers, but let me continue with this. Now, the evolutionist story is, let me give you the scientific terminology here, is hogwash. It doesn't match what we observe. You see, if there was that sediment, the bottom layer was laying out there for 500 million years with nothing on top of it, we would find signs of chemical and physical erosion all through there, but we don't.
Yeah.
So how did it get laid down? The only known way we can have that happen is called the Genesis Flood, the worldwide flood.
Yeah.
It came over and laid the bottom layer down, and very soon afterwards it had to lay the top layer down. That's the only way we can figure out we don't have any signs of erosion in there. And that's exactly what we find, a very straight line all the way across there. A worldwide flood would have laid down many, many layers of sedimentation. Now we can go to Mount St. Helens for the many thin layers called laminae, sometimes only millimeters thick. Mount St. Helens showed us that you can have thousands of thin layers laid down instantly. The pyroclastic flows and the hot gas and ash and the mud flows came down up there, they will actually sort out the sediments into thin layers rapidly. And that's exactly what the worldwide flood did in the Grand Canyon in Zion Park. We've actually observed that through other methods called turbidites. Turbidites are basically underwater landslides. More than 50% of this whole world's sedimentation was actually laid down by turbidites, underwater landslides, and the geologists agree with them. And we've actually observed 100,000 square miles of sediment being laid down in a matter of hours in the early 1930s off Newfoundland. Underground earthquake and underground water landslide, 100,000 square miles sediments instantly. So the biblical flood is the best explanation for the geology we see out there.
I agree. And how about clay? Just clay beds.
Yeah, clay is just the same type of process. I'm not a geologist now, so I'd have to refer to a geologist on some of the clay beds that we see out there. But again, the same principle gets laid down very hot, very fast, and then based on the minerals and elements is why we get some of the clays there.
By water. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. God bless.
Amen.
Well, you can give us a call at 800-955-8200. That's 800-955-8200. And we come back. I want to give you some more of these. Do you have any confidence in the evolutionist dating methods? We've already seen that one time after another, they just keep giving us misinformation. When we come back, I want to talk about the Neanderthal disaster. This recently happened, the Neanderthal disaster. Bad news for evolutionist thinking people. Be back in just a few moments to talk about Neanderthal disaster. Give us a call at 800-955-8200. Welcome back to Creation Matters. I'm your host, Mike Riddle, and this is our open line time. And give us a call at 800-955-8200. Before we go to our next caller, I want to continue with our Neanderthal disaster on dating. A professor and carbon-14 dating expert was charged with deliberately fabricating the dates. He's forged dates for over 30 years. He carbon-dated some of these bones at 36,000 years old, 21,000 years old, and 27,000 years old. Now they're all recognized to be less than 7,000 years old. Over 30 years of fabricating dates. How many other dates are wrong, and why did it take so long to discover this? Do you still have confidence in the evolutionist dating? I sure don't. And basically because it doesn't match the biblical record of only about 6,000 years old. Well, let's go to our next caller, Ed from Seattle. Welcome.
Yes.
You have a question for us.
Well, I just had a comment, and I have some tracts at home with the testimony of Darwin towards the last part of his life where he just ridiculed his unproven theories that he had as a youth, you know. Apparently he was quite an orator, and he turned right back to the Lord and confessed the Lord as the mighty Son of God, as his own Savior. I have some tracts, and I'd be happy to send one along to just let you down them.
Well, I'd be happy to get these tracts, Ben, but we got to be careful on this. We got to be real careful on what Darwin did and how he believed. First of all, Darwin only had a degree in religion, so we call him the Reverend Darwin. He did not have a degree in science. I love to point that out to the evolutionist.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was a racist also, when he put women as a subclass. But Charles Darwin, what you have there is something that was actually promoted by a person by the name of Lady Hope. Lady Hope wrote a lot of this story.
Uh-huh.
But she had been to his home on numerous occasions, but she was not there when he died. So when she describes the room, it doesn't quite appear as it really did. And if you read through Lady Hope's history, her story gets a little bigger and bigger as you go along. Whether or not Charles Darwin really recanted, we're not absolutely sure on that. Hope, as a Christian, I would hope he did, because I don't hope anybody to have eternity in hell.
No, I sure don't.
But we don't have the exact evidence that he did, but I'd love to get one of those tracks from you. You can go to our website, creationmatters.org, to see how you can get in touch with us.
Yeah, yeah.
And thanks a lot, Ed, and God bless.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm saying is that people that promote evolution are promoting material out of Darwin's trash can.
That's probably where it belongs.
Out of his trash can. He himself admitted it was a mistake. It was an error.
Yes, he said, actually, in his book, Origin of Species, he said he had a lot of problems with it, and he said if we couldn't find the fossils, that would be enough to falsify it, and folks, we haven't found the fossils at all to support evolution.
Do you think that's the last book he read, he wrote?
No, actually, he wrote a couple other ones, Descent of Man, which was very, very racist.
Really?
Very racist.
Yeah. So I'm not a racist, so I wouldn't tolerate that for a moment.
I certainly
wouldn't. I can see the racism. It hinges upon evolution, you know.
Yes.
I mean, a false concept of man's origin.
Right, and they always go from dark to light. And, you know, they took those pictures out of the textbooks because those pictures promoted racism. In other words, the evolutionists are afraid to tell us what they really believe. Now, not to believe that evolutionists today are racist, but the concept evolution is a racist idea.
Totally.
Well, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Mike.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's go to our next call. Joseph, you have a question.
Yes, Mike, do you remember me? Joseph Mastropolo.
I was just thinking about you the other day, and I almost gave you a call. Well, happy to hear from you there, Joseph. How are you doing?
Just fine. I have two questions for you, Mike.
Sure.
I wondered, first of all, if you had heard of the National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools.
I'm not real familiar with that one.
Well, I can maybe send you an email on it, but they say on their website that they have the Bible course in curricula in 292 school districts in 35 states.
That's right. The Bible is allowed to be taught in schools as literature.
Well,
history.
I think they have it in, and I thought that was very interesting and also very encouraging. Because I think you have a copy of Biology for the 21st Century.
Yes, I believe I do.
And in that, it finds that Genesis is scientifically tenable.
You betcha. It matches what we observed out there. We have to believe by faith, but it matches the evidence better than anything else.
Now, suppose that a public school had the Bible in its curriculum, let's say as a history course, and the science teachers knew that it was scientifically tenable. And you know that school teachers love to have what they call integration in their curriculum. That is to say, they like to be able to support the subject that is different from the one that is being taught. Now, that seems to me a natural situation where a science teacher could say Genesis is scientifically tenable, and we're teaching Genesis in the history course, and this is what Genesis says about history, and here's how we put it together with biology for the 21st century. What do you think of that?
I think it would be a great idea, but we do have to get qualified teachers on that, that understand biblical history. That would be the only drawback, but it's a great idea, and I'd love to see that happen, because I think, well, first of all, we're in a fallen world. If it was a perfect world, we'd have the Bible in everything, everything, everywhere. The Bible would be our groundwork. That'd be our first source. But that's a good thing to be going on. I'd love to get that some more information from the National Council there. And Dr. Mastropaolo, why don't you give the people your credentials there? Because you do believe in creation, in a literal six-day creation. I'd like to make sure the people out there understand who you are there.
Well, I like to represent myself as a pure scientist, and that I used to be an evolutionist because I went through the public schools and I was led to believe that's all there was. And what I found out later was that they had deceived me. I consider that the greatest betrayal of my life, being told that evolution was really science and that there wasn't any alternative. So, but I went through a lot of schooling. I have a PhD. I did a postdoctoral research fellowship for the National Heart Institute, National Institutes of Health, for 3 years. I was a research physiologist for the Chicago Board of Health for 4 years. I was an aerospace physiologist for McDonnell Douglas for 3 years. And I taught biomechanics and physiology at California State University, Long Beach, for 26 years. So I have a little bit. Oh, and I published 2 monographs on life in space while I was at Douglas, one for experimental animals and one for humans. And that really opened my eyes about how little we knew about what we require and what animals require for us to survive. The other thing that I did that might be interesting for the listeners is we had 2 prizes offered by the Royal Aeronautical Society in the 1970s. For the first one was for a 1 mile figure eight course to be flown with human power only. And I was the physiologist for that project and we won that prize. Then they offered a 2nd prize for double the money. Now, the first one was 50,000 English pounds. The second was 100,000. And that was to go from England to France, of course, without touching the water. And we won that prize as well. And the Royal Aeronautical Society was very gracious and gave me a medal for physiology for that project.
Well, I'd love to have, you know, I've met you many, many times here, and I've learned a lot from you, Dr. Mastropaolo. As a matter of fact, I still use some of your materials that I learned from you. And I would love to see you talking and teaching in front of a lot of our biology teachers today so they could learn real science. Wouldn't that be great if we could get you in front of them?
I think that would be excellent. But I'm really anxious to know. I think you're connected with AIG. Is that right?
That's correct.
I'm anxious to know what position AIG takes on getting the Bible into the curriculum as this organization, this National Council on Bible Curriculum in Public Schools. I'd like to know what position they take on that and also what position they take on biology for the 21st century. Mike, that second reference essentially says, actually, it challenged the foremost evolutionists in the world to dispute the claim that that evolution is an inverted fantasy religion based on vitalism superstitions, which are the opposite of reality, and taught by frauds and forgeries in the public schools. I would like to know where AIG stands on those 2 issues. They seem to me vital for the public schools of the country and for preventing the betrayal of those students like what I experienced. I would like students in the public schools to realize that there is something else besides evolution. As a matter of fact, evolution is worse than a superstition.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dr. Masparo, I will get back with you tomorrow on that answer.
Okay.
I will call Answers in Genesis tomorrow morning and get right back to you on that, because I'm very fascinated with all of that, too, because one of the things I do at Answers in Genesis is the education department. So if I could get back with you on that one tomorrow.
I'd be very gratified if you would.
Thank you so much for calling.
It was my pleasure.
God bless. Well, let's go to our next caller. We have somebody, Isaac from Buckley.
Hi, Mike.
How are you doing today?
Oh, pretty good, thanks. Got a couple questions for you. My son he's just finished up kindergarten. He'll go into first grade next year, and he's really into dinosaurs and, you know, all that stuff that usually kids are. And so he's got a bunch of books, and whenever I'm reading them to him, or he's reading them to me sometimes, I'm explaining to him about how the millions of years really didn't exist, and that's what they think, but they're wrong, and we talk a little bit about that. So my first question is kind of, where can I get some, you know, resources and whatnot to be able to show him, so he's got the books that have more truth in it than the ones he has? But
okay.
Then my biggest issue is later on, when he hits junior high and starts, you know, hitting science classes, and they start talking about evolution, is what can I do, you know, whether I got to, you know, go up to school board, or what can I do to try to, you know, at least, you know, if they want to teach that, fine, but at least show the flaws of it.
Well, let me answer both of those here. We're going to be going to a break here in just a moment, but if you can, I'm going to get part of it here, but if you can hold on till after the break. But if not, I'll answer them anyway. The first one, information about dinosaurs, go to the answersingenesis.org website. Answersingenesis.org, and then click on the tab that says Q&A. And you'll see a whole list of topics, and one of them will be dinosaurs. And there are tremendous amounts of information on dinosaurs you can get for free right there.
Okay.
So we're going to go for a break. And when we come back from the break, if you want to hold on, I'll get to the other question of what you can do. So
okay.
Give us a call, 800-955-8200. Welcome back to Creation Matters, and we're talking an open line here, 800-955-8200. We have just a few minutes left, and we're talking to Isaac from Buckley. And Isaac, are you still there?
I sure am.
Good. And we mentioned that the best way to get the information about dinosaurs is go to the answersingenesis.org website. And also, I do a lot of speaking on dinosaurs around the country, and we're coming out with a brand new DVD for children here shortly.
Oh, cool.
You'll have a lot of teaching on it. And your second question, what can you do when your children get to junior high and they really get confronted with this? Well, number one, as the Bible says, we need to be on our knees in prayer to protect our children. And pray always to protect our children. And then we need to be like 1 Peter 3:15 Christians. We need to prepare ourselves to have a ready answer. And again, you can go to the Answers in Genesis website and get lots of information from there and start slowly preparing yourself for all of this. There's many, many books. There's hundreds and hundreds of books, resources, and DVDs out there you can order. Or you can have a seminar. You can have somebody from Answers in Genesis come in, or myself come in, or I do represent Answers in Genesis, to do a seminar and talk to people. So three different ways we can do that.
Oh, wonderful.
And I really appreciate you calling in, and God bless, Isaac.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Well, let's go to Jay from Bremerton. You have a question for us.
Hi, Mike. My question concerns the flood and mechanisms for how that happened. You know, there's the theory of the big ice ball that I kind of like to lean towards, that the big ice ball that came from outer space and shattered before it impacted Earth and, you know, precipitating the flood. And I'd like to get your take on that and other ideas.
Well, the good question about what caused the flood. You know, the first place I go is right to the Bible, where God says, I do create a flood. So God was the instigator of it. He knew it was going to happen before the foundations of the earth, but he started it. But then during the whole process, he probably used a lot of natural processes that go along.
Right.
Now, the big ice cube, the big comet coming down, that's one possible idea. There's also the people think about something called the canopy theory. That's a possibility. There's also, remember, much of the water came from the deep. And if we have springs that are like 10 miles deep and that bursts forth, that's going to spring way up into the atmosphere and come back down as rain. And that's a, and we have actually have found some springs that are that deep.
So we found evidence for that?
Yes, we have actually found some springs today that are much deeper than anybody thought. So there's good evidence that could have been a combination of all three of those or any one of them. But the fact is, it's God who started it. And thank you very much for giving us a call there, Jay.
Good. Joe.
Well, let's go to Tom. You have a question for us.
Well, I have a comment, Mike. You said something about 6,000 years early on in the program here about the age of the Earth. And I just was looking at, you know, just crunching numbers, just common sense. But, you know, from Adam to Seth, I mean, Adam was 130 years old when he had Seth and so on and so forth, all the way up to Noah, which is a period of 1,656 years. So now if Adam, you know, was alive for a period of time before sin, it could be pretty close to 2,000 years before the flood. And then from Noah, from Shem to Abraham, you have a period of about 320 years. If you take the average of that, you come up with 41.5 years. In Matthew 1, you've got 14 generations, 14 generations, 14 generations. If you take that average, you come up to 2,063 years. And now here we are in the year 2005 with a millennial reign of Christ, you know, left to be fulfilled at some point in time. And I'm thinking, you know, just crunching the numbers, we're real close to coming into that last millennial rest. You know, I mean, even in creation, you had, you know, the evening and the morning were the first day. And God rested on the seventh day. So I'm thinking this is a lot closer to 6 or 7,000 years than 6 or 7 million or billion years.
You betcha. The Bible says that. And you hit it right on the nail. In Genesis 5, it gives the genealogies. Adam to Noah is about 2,000. Noah to Abraham is about 2,000. Abraham to on up, we're about 6,000 years old when you look at the whole thing.
That's what I'm thinking.
And, you know, the science does support that. Thank you so much for giving us a call there, Tom.
Thank you.
Well, let's go to our final caller, Kathy from Renton. You have a question for us. We have,
yes, I do.
We have just a few seconds left here.
Have you ever heard of the book, The God Code, and what do you think about it?
I'm not real familiar with that. I'm familiar with a lot of codes that have been happening out there, but I'm not familiar with the God Code.
That is about if you take the DNA and you put numbers to it on the periodic table, and then you put the alphabet to it, it spells out God Eternal within us.
Well, I've never looked at that one, so I'm unfamiliar with that one. But, you know, God can do amazing things, can't he? If he can create DNA, he can do anything.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for giving us a call. And again, we look forward to seeing you next week on Creation Matters. And go to our website, creationmatters.org, or go to the answersingenesis.org website. God bless.
You've been listening to Creation Matters with your host, Mike Riddle, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live. If you'd like more information on today's topic or information about Christian training and development services, simply call 425-269-3196. That's 425-269-3196. Or go to the website creationmatters.org. That's creationmatters.org. And click on the KGNW radio box. Join us next Tuesday at 6 when we'll discover and discuss the truth that for by Him all things were created. That's all right here next week on Creation Matters, the Tuesday edition of Hope Now Live.